where Fairfield comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Joining us now is Aileen Brill, whose husband, incidentally, I met on a plane, which is so great to be able to say that today, that people are actually talking and meeting with each other as they travel again. Aileen Brill is an attorney. She lives in Westport. She was with Skadden Arps, one of the top law firms in the whole country for many years. But when she decided to segue to volunteer work, she's done so with a vengeance. She's refocused her legal career to advocate for causes like gun violence prevention, in which her activism can really make a difference. She is the secretary of the board of the Council of Churches of Greater Bridgeport and a member of its advocacy committee. She's also a board member of Swords to Plowshares and a Bridgeport team leader for Connecticut Against Gun Violence. She joins us now to talk about the concrete ways in which Connecticut has made a difference and something still on the agenda. Aileen Brill, welcome back. Hello to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great. And I saw that you are very specific and targeted in what is a three-prong approach to gun violence prevention, beginning with legislation and then education and then action. Tell us a little bit about some of the legislation that Connecticut has passed that you think has made a real difference.
Sure. Connecticut is actually at the forefront when it comes to gun violence prevention. We have some of the strictest laws in the country, and that is directly reflected in some of the lowest gun violence rates in the country. In 2018, we banned bump stocks. Well, backing up, following the Sandy Hook massacre, the legislation immediately banned assault weapons in Connecticut. Then fast-forwarding 2018, they banned bump stocks. In 2019, we enacted laws that banned ghost guns and requiring safe storage of guns in homes and vehicles. That was an important legislative year because more often than not, crimes are committed with stolen guns. And so if guns are left unattended in vehicles or in homes, they can be stolen. They can also get into the hands of children. And that was one of the strongest proponents of that bill was the family of Ethan Song, who was a teenager in Guilford who died by just getting a hold of a gun at a friend's house. And it was just a complete accident. But his parents, in the wake of that, have dedicated their lives to ensuring that there are proper restrictions in place so that children don't have access to guns. So that was really the important legislation in 2019. Then in 2020, of course, we took a suspended session as a result of COVID. And in 2021, we moved forward with strengthening the existing laws on extreme risk protection orders. And those have actually gotten a lot of press lately as a result of the massacre in Buffalo, the red flag law, which is what it's generally referred to, as well as in Uvalde, because in both of those situations, those were individuals who had a history of concern that they should not have been allowed to purchase guns based on their past history. So in Connecticut was one of the first states to enact risk protection orders, and that was back in the 90s, and it was after a shooting at the Connecticut State Lottery, just an office shooting. And there were clear red flags that indicated that that individual should never have been allowed to purchase a firearm. And as a result, the legislature issued the very first extreme risk protection order, which became sort of a blueprint for states after that. And fast forward in 2019, 2020, we actually had a weaker law than other states that had followed our laws. So we strengthened it with a number of common sense provisions. For example, you could remove somebody's guns, but you couldn't prevent them from actually obtaining guns. And then once the order expired, they automatically got their guns back without having a hearing to determine that this person was actually in a place where they should be able to possess firearms again. So it's a process that ensures due process of their protection. It has to, it takes place in a court of law. There are a lot of restrictions in place, but it is an avenue for people to raise concerns for somebody who clearly should not have access to firearms. And one of the additional provisions in the more recent law is that it expands the universe of people who can raise that red flag. Mm-hmm. So it's not just law enforcement, but it's healthcare providers and family members.
Yeah,
exactly.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. We're chatting with Aileen Brill, and we're talking about some very concrete information that you're going to want to know about what Connecticut has done with respect to reducing gun violence. So when I know that you talk about advocating as well, but in terms of education, tell me about how your activism, you think, translates into reducing gun violence.
Sure. You know, the laws are meaningless if people don't know about them, right? So part of what we do is try to raise awareness in the community and communicate that to the members of our community. For example, distributing gun locks and gun safes at our events for free. A lot of parents may not know that it's a requirement to have guns safely secured in their homes. It's also starting the conversation with parents. You know, if your child is going on a play date to a friend's house, do you inquire of those parents, do you have a gun in the house? And does your child know what to do if they should come across a gun?
Don't go near it.
Exactly. But if that gun is safely secured and has a lock, it's less of a concern.
Yeah, no, I know. It's a very, very sobering statistic that right now the leading cause of death for young people is gun violence. It has surpassed car accidents for the
first
time.
Exactly. For the first time, it has surpassed automobile accidents.
It's just shocking. Yeah. And in Connecticut, I just have some sites from what you've sent us, that young black men are 39 times more likely to be murdered with a gun than white men. Approximately 56% of the state's gun homicide victims are black, but only 10% of the state's population is black. And in general, victims of gun violence are disproportionately people of color. So tell us about this Project Longevity. What is that?
Project Longevity is a grassroots organization that goes directly into the community and tries to diffuse violence before it takes place. So especially in communities where there's a prevalence of gangs, Project Longevity has people on the ground that knows the kids in the community and appeals to them on a much different level before they get involved in the criminal justice system. The idea with Project Longevity is to keep kids out of the criminal justice system. And that was part of the push in 2022 for funding for community gun violence prevention. The state has now established a commission on the prevention of community gun violence, which will fund groups like Project Longevity, which exists in Bridgeport, is also up in Hartford, which have just amazing results-driven work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big picture. The big picture.
The reducing, the
giving people the skills to be able to resolve conflict in their own lives so that it doesn't erupt in rages and paranoid fits of frenzy and, you know, burying oneself in a virtual world with like-minded individuals online and then taking a gun. You got to go deeper than that. We're chatting with Aileen Brill. So tell me about these gun buybacks. And I want to let our community know that on June 18th from 9 to 1 p.m., right at the Bridgeport Community Services Building is a gun buyback. Are there consequences for turning in what may be an illegally possessed gun?
Nope. It's all done anonymously. There's no ID required. You simply drive up. You hand your weapon. It should be unloaded, and it will be handed over directly to an officer, and you will receive American Express gift cards in exchange, depending on what type of weapon is turned in. So
really?
Whether it was acquired illegally or you're not the rightful owner of it, we've had a number of situations where a widow has come and said, my husband has passed away. we've had this gun in the house. I don't want it. I don't have any need for a gun. I don't know what to do with it, so I would like to turn it in. Other examples would be we've had a set of grandparents who've said, you know, we've had this gun, but we have our grandchildren now coming to stay with us for the summer, and we just don't feel comfortable having a gun in the house with children.
Yeah.
So it's a way for people who otherwise don't know how to dispose of the gun to safely do so.
Yeah, they don't know what to do. It's very true. You don't want to necessarily sell it. You don't. It's very hard for people. So June 18th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Bridgeport Community Services Building, we're chatting with Aileen Brill, who's a local activist. I was very intrigued with the Swords to Plowshares. Can you tell us about this organization? What is it?
Absolutely. This is an incredible organization that's looking at gun violence from a very holistic, from a healing perspective. What they do is they work with organizations that run gun buybacks. In fact, they will be present on Saturday in Bridgeport. And they take guns that have been turned in buybacks and break them down, dismantle them, and rework them in an iron forge into garden tools. And they donate the tools to youth programs, community gardens. It's an amazing representation of taking a weapon of death and transforming it into an instrument of life. Something positive can come out of.
Very beautiful.
So and to say it's the process itself. I've done it. I've actually worked at the forge, and you know, you work with a hammer and an anvil. It's, you know, sort of very medieval, the setup.
I love this.
And there's such a catharsis to literally beating this weapon into a beautiful shovel,
a spade, right, or something.
Yeah.
That is so cool. That was founded by Bishop Jim Curry, a retired Episcopal bishop in Connecticut, Steve Yanosky, a communications director for Newtown Action Alliance, and Dr. Pina Violano, who's a manager of injury and violence prevention program at Yale. That is such a cool thing. I think that's so, amazing.
They work in connection with a company called Raw Tools, Inc., which is out of Colorado. And it started in the wake of Sandy Hook with the same idea that we have to do some, we have to take guns off the street, and we have to change the conversation and turn them into something positive. So there was actually a national gun buyback last Saturday. Bridgeport is sort of technically on the tail end of it this Saturday. 14 states participated at 23 different locations, and the hope is to build that over time. There's a lot of momentum now, especially this has become very part of the national conversation. Unfortunately, it tends to happen after a tragedy, but if any good can come out of it, maybe we'll see meaningful federal legislation. As well as a real awareness about gun violence prevention and how we live. We live in a country where violence takes place in a way that it doesn't happen anywhere else in the world.
We're chatting with Aileen Brill. I don't know if you saw this morning that leading Hollywood directors, writers, and producers have signed a pledge about on-screen guns. Interestingly enough, like Shonda Rhimes, who lives, frankly, locally in Westport, but there's a lot of people on this, including Debbie Allen, Jimmy Kimmel, Bill Lawrence, Adam McKay, Mark Ruffalo, Amy Schumer. And they wrote a letter in which they say, we're not asking anyone to stop showing guns on screen. We are asking writers, directors, and producers to be mindful of on-screen gun violence and model gun safety best practices. They want to show characters locking up their guns safely and making them inaccessible to children. They want to have at least one conversation during pre-production regarding the way guns are portrayed on screen. They want to limit scenes that combine children and guns. They say these are small things we can do as a community. Of course, they don't, you know, actually talk about the other horror, which was Alec Baldwin killing somebody on set as a result of what may or may not have been a necessary scene to have been, you know, shot to begin with in a Western.
Right, and that just speaks to gun safety in general.
Gun safety,
accidents happen.
Right, they do. They do. Horrible accidents happen. So do you think that Hollywood chiming in here will also play an important role?
Hollywood can always change the conversation. They have such a platform to do so. And it's it's going to take all members of the community to convince voters, because that's, in fact, what we need, is for voters to speak up. The statistics show that, you know, more than 90% of the country wants enhanced background checks. And, you know, more than 70% want a ban on assault weapons. But for some reason, that doesn't translate into federal legislation. The Senate doesn't seem to get there. And so there's a real disconnect. And if Hollywood can promote awareness and encourage people to stand up and speak out to their senators and their elected officials, whether it's at the state level, frankly, or at the federal level, stricter gun laws across the board will keep us safer.